Task 2. Listen to the recording for text 1.
In 2012, the whole world watched the Curiosity rover pull off a spectacular landing on Mars. But that smooth landing might not have happened at all. Just days before it, I discovered an error. It turned out that our team had placed the spacecraft's unit essential for landing a few inches above where the software expected it. I wasn't sure if the mistake would affect anything, but theoretically it could have destroyed the rover upon landing. I realized we had two options: do nothing and risk a crash, or send a special programming command to the spacecraft and hope it wouldn't have any nasty consequences. I went to see Pete, the project manager, and I explained the error, taking full responsibility. We took it to the board of experts that deals with these things, and they voted that change was not necessary. I felt relieved the decision had been made. But that night I started thinking, had we considered all the aspects? In this business, you need to be paranoid to be successful. You have to assume that an error could be the tip of an iceberg. I got anxious and I couldn't sleep all night. In the morning, I went back to the project manager and we agreed to call another meeting for Saturday morning. We worked that whole night, filling whiteboard after whiteboard with equations. At 10 a.m. on Saturday, just one day before the landing, we met with upper management, and we heard that NASA headquarters in Washington had been told about this issue. Most of the team members voted for no change, but when the project manager's turn came, he said he wanted the change and overruled everybody. I knew that our equations had convinced him. There was grumbling, with some people openly disagreeing and trying to change the project manager's position, but he contacted the headquarters and convinced them we'd better send the software fix to the Curiosity rover. When the decision was finally made, the project manager looked at me and said, "Miguel, excellent job." I was startled because I felt that I had let him down, but he told me that it was excellent because, first of all, I had found the error and got to the bottom of the problem. Secondly, I had come and told him about what had been bothering me. I was proud that I worked in a team in which openness was appreciated. We sent the programming fix to the Curiosity rover that night. The next day, the landing went fantastically well.
Listen to the recording once again.
In 2012, the whole world watched the Curiosity rover pull off a spectacular landing on Mars. But that smooth landing might not have happened at all. Just days before it, I discovered an error. It turned out that our team had placed the spacecraft's unit essential for landing a few inches above where the software expected it. I wasn't sure if the mistake would affect anything, but theoretically, it could have destroyed the rover upon landing. I realized we had two options: do nothing and risk a crash, or send a special programming command to the spacecraft and hope it wouldn't have any nasty consequences. I went to see Pete, the project manager, and I explained the error, taking full responsibility. We took it to the board of experts that deals with these things, and they voted that change was not necessary. I felt relieved the decision had been made. But that night I started thinking, had we considered all the aspects? In this business, you need to be paranoid to be successful. You have to assume that an error could be the tip of an iceberg. I got anxious and I couldn't sleep all night. In the morning, I went back to the project manager and we agreed to call another meeting for Saturday morning. We worked that whole night, filling whiteboard after whiteboard with equations. At 10 a.m. on Saturday, just one day before the landing, we met with upper management, and we heard that NASA headquarters in Washington had been told about this issue. Most of the team members voted for no change, but when the project manager's turn came, he said he wanted the change and overruled everybody. I knew that our equations had convinced him. There was grumbling, with some people openly disagreeing and trying to change the project manager's position, but he contacted the headquarters and convinced them we'd better send the software fix to the Curiosity rover. When the decision was finally made, the project manager looked at me and said, "Miguel, excellent job." I was startled because I felt that I had let him down, but he told me that it was excellent because, first of all, I had found the error and got to the bottom of the problem. Secondly, I had come and told him about what had been bothering me. I was proud that I worked in a team in which openness was appreciated. We sent the programming fix to the Curiosity rover that night. The next day, the landing went fantastically well.
Read the questions for text 2. Listen to the recording for text 2.
Today my guest is Jackson Galaxy, an expert on cat behaviour. Could you tell us a little more about catification, the idea from your new book?
From the very beginning of my career, I've been talking about getting to know your cat and accommodating its needs, especially providing vertical spaces and shelves around the house, the so-called cat superhighways. About 2 years ago, I met Kate Benjamin. I totally agree with her approach. She emphasizes that catifying your place, that is, adjusting your place to your cat's needs, does not mean that your house has to look weird. Everybody has a sort of image of what the crazy cat lady's house looks like. It is essential to show people that's not necessarily true. Convince them that, despite a cat's presence, their house can still be stylish. I decided to write this book because many behavior problems can be overcome by properly catifying the house. Among other things in the book, I show examples of spaces which I consider best adapted to cats' needs.
What do you feel is the biggest misconception that people have about cats?
The common perception of cats is that they are aloof. That's why many people feel cats are not an active part of the family. They're more like furniture in the house. Yet, this is just a misreading of their nature. We expect cats to behave like dogs or humans, which is a mistake. They are a different species and they express affection in a different way. The problem is that by thinking that cats are not socially needy, we often stop interacting with them. I hear people complain that their cat sleeps all day and doesn't play. But that's natural for cats. Cats sleep a lot and spend a lot of their time staring out the window. But when we come home from work, our cats are right there waiting for us. It's not just about them wanting food. They want our attention. When we wake up in the morning, they're completely up, eager to play and awaiting affection. Why not take the time then and interact with them when they are most alert?
In the UK, most rescue centres will only consider a healthy cat going to a new home if the house has access to the outdoors. Whereas in the US, people are encouraged to keep their cats indoors. What's your viewpoint?
It has been a constant struggle for me. When I work with cats that are to be kept indoors, I work extra hard on accommodating the place for cats' needs and, if possible, giving them enclosures where they can experience the outdoors, but in a safe way. In the States, we deal with a lot of missing cats. If you don't have your cat microchipped and it goes missing, you have a 2% chance of reclaiming it. 2%! Between traffic, predators, and the world at large, would you be willing to take the risk? I think it's better to have your cats around and enrich their lives in such a way that they won't miss wandering around the neighborhood. But the decision is yours.
Listen to the recording once again.
Today my guest is Jackson Galaxy, an expert on cat behaviour. Could you tell us a little more about catification, the idea from your new book?
From the very beginning of my career, I've been talking about getting to know your cat and accommodating its needs, especially providing vertical spaces and shelves around the house, the so-called cat superhighways. About 2 years ago, I met Kate Benjamin. I totally agree with her approach. She emphasizes that catifying your place, that is, adjusting your place to your cat's needs, does not mean that your house has to look weird. Everybody has a sort of image of what the crazy cat lady's house looks like. It is essential to show people that's not necessarily true. Convince them that, despite a cat's presence, their house can still be stylish. I decided to write this book because many behavior problems can be overcome by properly catifying the house. Among other things in the book, I show examples of spaces which I consider best adapted to cats' needs.
What do you feel is the biggest misconception that people have about cats?
The common perception of cats is that they are aloof. That's why many people feel cats are not an active part of the family. They're more like furniture in the house. Yet, this is just a misreading of their nature. We expect cats to behave like dogs or humans, which is a mistake. They are a different species and they express affection in a different way. The problem is that by thinking that cats are not socially needy, we often stop interacting with them. I hear people complain that their cat sleeps all day and doesn't play. But that's natural for cats. Cats sleep a lot and spend a lot of their time staring out the window. But when we come home from work, our cats are right there waiting for us. It's not just about them wanting food. They want our attention. When we wake up in the morning, they're completely up, eager to play and awaiting affection. Why not take the time then and interact with them when they are most alert?
In the UK, most rescue centres will only consider a healthy cat going to a new home if the house has access to the outdoors. Whereas in the US, people are encouraged to keep their cats indoors. What's your viewpoint?
It has been a constant struggle for me. When I work with cats that are to be kept indoors, I work extra hard on accommodating the place for cats' needs and, if possible, giving them enclosures where they can experience the outdoors, but in a safe way. In the States, we deal with a lot of missing cats. If you don't have your cat microchipped and it goes missing, you have a 2% chance of reclaiming it. 2%! Between traffic, predators, and the world at large, would you be willing to take the risk? I think it's better to have your cats around and enrich their lives in such a way that they won't miss wandering around the neighborhood. But the decision is yours.